You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Now, Odessa was musing in the abstract about whether an artificial intelligence could have the same effect on reality as a biologically evolved consciousness. But how would you go about actually building a Blade Runner-style replicant? Quantum physicist Jane Thompson of the Center for Quantum Technologies in Singapore and her colleagues have been thinking about whether sprinkling in some quantum ingredients could make an AI's memory more efficient. As she explained over a slightly challenging Skype line to reporter Colin Stewart.
We humans have a long history of trying to create artificial copies of living things. Physicist Jane Thompson is not only fascinated by our fixation with these automaton, but she believes studying how to make optimum copies might teach us something fundamental about the quantum nature of reality. She started our conversation by giving me a potted history of some of our more colourful attempts at mimicry.
It turns out that it's quite a long history, and the earliest written records were purportedly mechanical birds, which supposedly could fly up to about 200 metres. And then there was a long history of people trying to design automaton with Leonardo da Vinci, who actually worked on robotic knights. And the idea was that he wanted a suit of armor to actually mimic a human being, or to mimic some of the gestures and some of the natural behavioral aspects of humans, and the way that he wanted it to actually be able to sit down, to engage with people, and to be able to lift its visor to salute people. And he actually had the whole thing working by pulleys and weights. The knight, or the mechanical armor, actually performed all of these tasks autonomously by itself. And then more recently, as things got a lot more complex and a lot more sophisticated, and I think about the 17th century, there was a duck. They put it on the stage, and supposedly this mechanical duck, it could walk around, could quack, it could eat, and they actually had live performances where they had a shit as well. So this was a big phenomenon in France. A lot of people actually were there watching this duck, or mechanical duck, imitate a real-life system. But there's a little bit of speculation that in reality the duck couldn't go to the toilet, and then what happened was it was some stage trickery where they sort of put the poo on the stage.
You said the Turing test is important in distinguishing whether something is conscious. Can you remind us of Turing's ideas?
If we, as a society, develop better and better artificial intelligence, at what stage do we call the thing conscious and maybe need to afford it rights as being a sentient being in some ways? And what he said was that, well, you should call it conscious when you talk to it and you ask any series of questions. You can't distinguish it from a real human being. So the moment in which there is no question, no test that you can do, such that you can decide whether it was a collection of computer parts and hardware or whether it was actually a conscious sentient being, is the point at which you should turn around and say, well, I accept that this is a conscious entity.
How does the ability to remember play a role in this?
If you think about what you have to do this, right? Well, obviously, we have our future behavior depends on our past experiences, usually. Like, we show some notion of continuity, in the sense that how we behave tomorrow depends in some ways on what's happened to us today. What's happening is that we're going through life experiencing things, experiencing sequences of events, and we're storing some information about those in our memory. And then, hopefully, in the future, when things happen again, we respond differently depending on our past experiences and depending on our memories. Hopefully we've learned from our past memories. We've adapted our behavior, at least supposedly if we're intelligent, we have. So to perfectly mimic these systems, you have to store some information about their past experiences in a memory, in a device somewhere, because the real-life system itself updates its behavior conditioned on what's happened to it in the past. So one part of the task is isolating out what pieces of information about the past you need to store, what pieces are relevant to the system's future behavior, and also then encoding them as efficiently as possible into the memory of the device, such that it can replicate the system's future responses. And what we found was that when you're quantum, or when the device is quantum, the amount of information about the past it needs to store, or the amount of past memories it has to keep track of, and how efficiently and how small a hard drive it can encode this information into, you can get this a lot smaller. So you can store a lot less information, use a much smaller hard drive. if you're willing for the system to have a quantum mechanical memory. And there's improvements over the best possible classical devices. So we can actually isolate out the minimum amount of information any classical device must store, and then we can beat it systematically, as long as we just allow the memory of the device to be quantum.
Why is a quantum memory more efficient than a classical one?
It's to do with the structure of quantum mechanics. And a little bit of it, and particularly in the case of these mimicking live systems, it has a little bit to do with the lack of a definite reality in quantum systems. So classical systems turn out to store how they're going to react to every single possible future stimuli. In some ways, they store a deterministic strategy. But quantum systems don't always have a deterministic answer, a pre-described answer to every question you can ask them. They lack a realistic description. Instead, when you go and ask the system a question, you as the observer create a context, and the act of observation, the act of making that measurement and asking that question, it creates the outcome, because the system wasn't definitively storing every single answer to every possible question you could ask it beforehand.
What was your motivation for working in this area? Is there a practical or theoretical payoff for understanding this area better?
When we approached it, originally at some levels it's an engineering task. Information and information storage and processing is very important in our society. As a matter of fact, I think there are some figures which suggest that the amount of energy and money we spend storing data is approximately equivalent to the cost of the airline industry. So we spend a lot of money storing and maintaining information. And increasingly, this is we have very complex systems which we wish to understand, and systems which have a large amount of data, perhaps footprints on the internet or something like this. We wish to be able to actually distill what's relevant out of this information and use it to make a prediction about what's going to happen in the future, or make a simulation of the future of that system. This is an immensely costly task as the systems get more and more complex. And in part, we were interested in it from an engineering perspective of, can a quantum device or a quantum computer, can it store less information and more easily isolate out what was the relevant pieces of information, such that it can run a simulation of what might happen in the future of the system on a much, much smaller hard drive. So it was originally in some ways an engineering question. But there is always a second motivation, which is fundamentally being curious about the nature of reality and the nature of the way information behaves in our reality. So on this level, can systems develop a preference for processing information using quantum degrees of freedom? Does it give an advantage if you were to actually store and process information in these degrees of freedom? Because it's fundamentally, there is a connection between the amount of information you store and the amount of inefficiency or heat dissipation which occurs during the process of generating the future behavior. And the less information you store, if you're quantum, you can reduce the amount of information you have to store, then you can be more efficient in the sense that you use less energy and you dissipate less heat. So is there a fundamental imperative which would make it more efficient to be quantum? And also, what makes a quantum system fundamentally different from a classical one? Does it actually fundamentally process information differently? Does it encode its relevant information about the past differently to one which is purely classical? So what's the signature of something being quantum?
Thank you to Jane Thompson for speaking with reporter Colin Stewart there.
She may have sounded a little like an AI herself, but we assure you that's only because of the bad Skype connection. You can read more about her research in an article that Thompson wrote for us, which we are linking to on the website at www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.